An 8-ton satellite may re-enter the atmosphere this morning. California lawmakers cut small flight schools a break. And a theory emerges in the Reno crash. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, September 23rd, 2011. UARS, NASA's Upper Atmosphere Research Satellite, ceased operations in December of 2005. It's expected to re-enter the Earth's atmosphere this morning, but NASA scientists are still not sure where the bus-sized carcass will land. As of our deadline, it hadn't done it yet. ABC News cites NASA scientist Mark Matney in reporting increased solar activity is causing the satellite's orbit to decay faster than originally anticipated. When it does re-enter the atmosphere, it will be the largest object to do so since Skylab in 1979. NASA's chief orbital debris scientist Nicholas Johnson says that 26 parts of the satellite are expected to survive re-entry and that, quote, all these have been identified as potentially causing damage if they hit a structure or a person, but the odds of that are very, very low, unquote. NASA says it won't be able to accurately forecast where the satellite will fall until about 2 hours before its re-entry, and the area of possible impact includes almost the entire populated area of the Earth. NASA estimates the footprint of the debris will be about 500 miles long, and says that anyone finding something suspected to be a piece of UARS should not touch it. Contact a local law enforcement official for assistance. In what lately counts as a rare bit of legislative sanity, the California legislature has passed, and Governor Jerry Brown has signed, Senate Bill 619 into law, providing relief to many of the flight training facilities that were facing burdensome regulation from the California Bureau of Private Post-Secondary Education. With the signing, flight training providers and flight training programs that pose no financial risk to students are exempted from the BPPE's regulations. The bill was introduced by State Senator Gene Fuller, sponsored by NATA, and supported by many in the industry. The fight for relief began in early 2010 after the California legislature knee-jerked over the Silver State helicopter scandal and imposed university-level reporting and auditing requirements on even small flight schools. Flight training providers were never included in the process, and the burdens imposed could have driven GA training out of the state. Under the new law, flight training providers and programs that don't require upfront payment of fees in excess of $2,500 and also do not require students to enter into contracts of indebtedness are exempted from regulation by the BPPE. In the story of last weekend's crash at Reno, some self-proclaimed accident experts said that because pilot Jimmy Leeward could not be seen through the cockpit canopy of his P-51 just before impact, the crash was obviously caused by the medical incapacitation of an elderly guy who should not have been flying. As irritating as it is to read the ignorant ramblings of armchair medical examiners, a report in the Wall Street Journal now points out they could be partially correct. The NTSB says this is all speculation, but investigators are said to be focusing on those photos, and the possibility exists that if the elevator trim tab did fail on the plane, the resulting violent pitch-up could have produced G-forces high enough to cause unconsciousness. Former NTSB investigator Greg Fay says the violent nature of the attitude change could also have ruptured part of the pilot's seat, making it impossible for Leeward to reach the controls. NTSB officials say a preliminary report on the accident could be out as early as today, but the establishment of probable cause will take several months or more. Up next on ANN, unions are getting fed up with congressional stalling. 9 more World War II servicemen have been buried with honors. And go fly this weekend before somebody decides it's too risky. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3222.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, September 23rd. I'm Paul Plack. The leaders of 14 unions with ties to the aviation industry have sent a letter to members of Congress urging the quick passage of a long-term FAA funding measure. The agency has been operating on continuing resolutions since the last full appropriation bill expired in 2007. In the letter, the union presidents call passage of an FAA bill critical to air safety. They add that such a bill, quote, will create more than 300,000 good jobs and will modernize our aging air traffic control system, unquote. And that failure to complete an aviation safety bill due to issues that have nothing to do with safety and expansion of our aviation system will be a major setback for the 757 million annual air travelers who rightfully expect their elected leaders to be responsible stewards of our aviation system. This is a call for what would essentially be a clean FAA reauthorization bill with no amendments covering extraneous issues. Neither the House nor Senate have been able to focus so far on getting such a bill passed. The Department of Defense POW Missing Personnel Office announced this week that the remains of 9 servicemen missing in action from World War II have been identified and are being returned to their families for burial with full military honors. 9 airmen were ordered to carry out a bombing mission over Rabaul, Papua New Guinea, in a B-17E flying fortress nicknamed Naughty But Nice on June 26, 1943. The aircraft was shot down by Japanese fighters. A 10th man, the navigator and only survivor of the crash, 2nd Lieutenant Jose L. Holguin, was held as a prisoner of war until September 1945. In 1949, U.S. military personnel were led by local citizens to a B-17 crash site on New Britain Island. Remains were recovered but couldn't be identified with the technology of the time, so they were buried as unknown in Honolulu. In 1982 and 83, Holguin returned to the area and located the crash site. A fragment of the aircraft nose art was recovered and is displayed in the War Museum in Kokopo, Papua New Guinea. In 1985, the remains were exhumed and identified. In 2001, a team from the POW MIA Accounting Command excavated the site and found additional human remains and equipment. Dental records and mitochondrial DNA, which matched that of some of the crew members' families, were used in the identification of their remains. Boys, welcome home at last. And finally, as soon as I turn this microphone off today, I'm headed off to the El Mirage Dry Lakebed in Southern California to enjoy the only aviation event I attend every year where I'm not working in some capacity. I'll spend the weekend relaxing with some of the most fun and interesting people I know and do a little gyroplane and gyroglider flying while I'm there. Sometimes there are movie or commercial sets on the dry lake when we arrive. We also get to see a wide variety of off-road machines being thoroughly enjoyed. The Southern California Timing Association has a groomed course for speed runs. There's also a Mad Max reenactment group that holds events there. It can be a wild place, and in years past it could also get pretty dangerous. It's called the Ken Brock Freedom Fly-In, and it's named for the late gyroplane pioneer who died a few years ago in a freak ground accident in a fixed-wing plane, and whose family still has a ranch bordering the lake. It got its name in part because there's no admission charge. But the Freedom Fly-In isn't as free as it used to be. A few years ago, the U.S. Bureau of Land Management announced it was going to be fencing in the famous off-road vehicle recreation area to tame things down. So now it costs $15 a day or $30 a week per vehicle to get in. And as far as anyone can tell, it must all go into paying off the fence because the bad apples are still out there tearing up the surface during the wet season. Maybe the fee is part of a deficit reduction program. Wherever the money's going, it's killed off the casual attendance by guys from the local area who'd bring their kids out just for Saturday morning for a while to see the unusual machines fly. The BLM's fencing in of the El Mirage Dry Lake looks to me like a metaphor for what's happening to general aviation. It's being increasingly fenced off, literally and figuratively, and now our president wants to hit some of us with a $100 fee every time we take off. That fee will almost certainly spread to Saturday morning recreational flights if it gets started, and it will keep us from sharing the joy of flight with our kids and grandkids. So, I'm heading for El Mirage this year with a sense that I'd better enjoy this unique place while I can, especially in light of what may come out of the tragedy in Reno. I'm concerned that our freedoms to take part in activities which involve risk, whether as participants or spectators, could be much more limited soon. The writing's kind of been on the wall for a long time now. So don't let a dumb recession stop you. Go fly this weekend, while you still can. That's the latest from Aero News. We'll be back Monday with more news and our weekly special feature with CFI Bob Miller. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.